Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. and Reverend Jane Galloway. She's author of The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. Is there more to recovery than just staying sober and clean? Dr. Jane Galloway offers an emphatic yes to the question in her groundbreaking 12-step companion guide, The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. Dr. Galloway presents the 12 steps squarely in the context of 21st century spirituality with breadth, skill, and sensitivity that helps readers of any faith or of none to experience a profound spiritual awakening. As a 30-plus year member of Alcoholics Anonymous, ordained pastor and doctor of ministry, accomplished stage and screen actor, and community organizer, Reverend Dr. Jane Galloway brings a woman's voice to the chorus of men who have previously spoken on 12-step spirituality. Her work is inspired by and devoted to AA's founding spiritual vision as it appears in the Big Book. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. The Gateways opens wider vistas to deeper wisdom within us all. For more information, you can visit Dr. Jane Galloway's website, which is janegalloway.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Galloway, Reverend Galloway, Jane, to the show. Good day. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Robert. Dr. Galloway is fine.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for joining me today. This is an important topic, and it's always good to get the information out there for people to to be inspired. So I usually like to start the show by having the guests kind of give a bit of a background and kind of their journey and what got them to this particular point in life. So would you mind sharing just a little bit about your journey? Because it's between the minister and the actor aspect, I mean, you have a broad spectrum of experience.
Yeah, I do. I was a professional actor for many years. I starred on Broadway, TV, film, started my own pilot for CBS and many TV movies, etc., a couple feature films. I never felt, it's a gift of mine, but acting is an interpretive art, meaning you're interpreting somebody else's work all the time. And while I had gifts there, it was never my primary calling. I was always interested in really more the social services and also writing. But we do what we do early on for various reasons, and I had a great career. It was hard to leave it because I had a lot of success. However, I did begin to evolve out of, really just strictly making my living as an actor when my friends began to die of AIDS, frankly, in the Broadway theater. It was a terrible time, and there was tremendous grief, and, the world was very difficult for actors then. I mean, we were all dealing with so much loss, and I ended up working in hospice as a volunteer, mostly to heal myself, frankly. It's the only place in the culture, especially then, that allowed us to grieve, and I found a lot of satisfaction working with people as they were in really extreme circumstances. But I found that people really were so authentic and real and really asking the big questions, which is all I've actually ever been interested in. So I began to transition into ministry. I mean, I have earned both doctorate and master's degrees from Claremont School of Theology. But before that, my transition schooling was in the human services department at a college in California where I studied alcohol and drug studies, et cetera, et cetera. I had been sober many years already at that point and had been involved in the program. But this was, you know, really in-depth learning. And so it was interesting. I kind of thought I was going to go into that field, and in a way I have since all that. So I was credentialed as an alcohol and drug educator, really decided to keep moving and kind of, you know, a lot of the practicums and the internships I did exposed me to many different populations. It was an amazing time, really. And what I kept realizing was that the common need, but I worked as a drama therapist in this transition time, and I was working with people who were frail elderly, battered women's shelters. I worked at Children's Hospital Orange County, all of these weekly as a drama therapist. And I kept kind of feeling like, you know, they don't need, I mean, drama therapy is a great tool and it's very helpful. But what I picked up from so many of these people was that the common denominator was that they really all were hungry for more contact with the human family. People were lonely. And so I rather than pursuing my graduate work in social work as I had, or psychology as I had anticipated doing, I switched to religion. And while I was doing that, and I ended up becoming ordained and pastoring two different communities, one in Southern California for 11 years, another one in New York City for 4 years. And then a lot of the work I have done over the years, I was making these notes, really drawings, actually, of the 12 steps, the chakras, you know, everything I would learn in developmental psychology from Piaget and Maslow and the beginning of the human potential movement writers, was this idea. I thought, wow, these are all developmental structures, and they all kind of use the human body, if you will, as a kind of almost a ladder. So Maslow, of course, who did Maslow's hierarchy of needs, said, you know, you have to, in really looking at the lives of highly actualized people, he said, well, you know, what he saw was that people had to meet their basic needs first. And that's where his triangle came in, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that the human really needs to manage the basic needs of food, clothing, shelter, safety, et cetera, before we can move to the higher spiritual states and not either go crazy or, you know, become kind of irrelevant to our own lives. So, anyway, I was drawing these things for a long time, and while I was in New York community of very smart people, one of my members said, you know, you can teach so many things, but what we really want to know is what works for you. And I said, oh, well, that's easy. It's the 12 steps plus all of these other psycho-spiritual things I have been doing over the many years that go along with that. And she said, write that. We need that. So I began writing almost within the week. It was interesting. It began to kind of pour out of me. And I wrote for 3 years. The book was written in the invisible, if you will. But I had to, you know, just commit myself to doing that writing. So I came back to California and really finished the book. So I finished the book in 2016. And it's a great companion guide for what I call next stage recovery, meaning, you know, the original folks in AA talked about this thing as a bridge back to life, and that's great. But over the years that I've been part of that organization, what I've seen is that a lot of people camp out on that bridge. They don't get back to life. They don't grow beyond this definition of themselves as either a sick person, really, or you know, something on that in recovery, continually in that recovery mode. That's fine. We're all recovering from something every day, really. But the idea really began to irritate me that so many people were stuck. I saw a lot of people stuck because the program really was written and devised for people who were thrilled to die sober. My father included. My father is very active in AA, but back in those days, people got sober a lot later and died younger because, frankly, medical care wasn't as good as it is now. So I began to see that we're not developmental stages for the next stage. What's the next stage? You can't keep defining yourself as a sick alcoholic because really what happened is forever because you're not well if you're describing yourself as sick. And people who actually work these steps, what I call weller than well. I mean, we have to walk a narrow path, those of us who utilize this path. And so really, the rest of the culture isn't quite as committed to rigorous honesty, self-honesty, et cetera, but, and so that we're well. We're weller than well. So rather than describing ourselves as ill, good thing to talk about the wellness aspect of this recovery path. But then what comes next and how do you support next stage recovery? So it's not present in the 12 steps as in the programs attached to the 12 step model at this moment. So that's really kind of the crux of my work. And in the gateways, I do a wonderful support for a continual psycho-spiritual growth path utilizing the 12 steps. And many psycho-spiritual tools, which I learned, studied, utilized over all these years of doing these various pursuits and educations and et cetera.
Wow.
That's about it.
In a nutshell. You know, that's quite, you know, it's interesting. I've always found it interesting how people's journey, the twists and turns and forks in that road, you know, that people in which way they choose. I mean, you know, and for you, the, you know, having the psychology aspect and then into the hospice and the ministry and all that kind of in the background, the 12-step process. To me, it's not surprising that you're, you know, doing, you know, what you are. And it seems that each of those experiences were stepping stones, you know, to kind of put together.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think every experience we have in life is a stepping stone to the next level. And so that's really I'm kind of a great example of my own work. I think we use, you know, in the professional world, the academic world, they talk about transferable skills. So how do you, you know, I was an actor for many years. I mean, you know, with the Me Too movement, et cetera, the general population is more aware of the restrictions on women within that field. But they're, you know, they're real. And so part of the thing is I wasn't ready to stop working. And I didn't want to play the stereotypic roles that industry offered. However, my skills travel beyond that. I do a lot of podcasts and online work, et cetera. So it's really about transferable skills. How do you keep moving? How do you keep moving? So, yeah, it's everybody's journey really is, you know, people get really stuck in definitions of themselves that have to do with yesterday and not with what's an ever-evolving path. So, yeah, so everybody's got a path that it's really kind of like, okay, how does this lead to that? And staying tuned in to today. Who am I today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I want to talk about the bridge, but before we do that, I just want to clarify the differences between stage one and stage two recovery. Is stage one basically the program, and then two is beyond, you know, kind of lies ahead?
You can use the program or not use the program for stage two as well. However, stage one recovery is essentially getting back on track, getting down that crazy, you know, I often see it as a way out on a limb beyond what our real authentic self is and always was. And so during the beginning of the process of recovery, we utilize the steps and really surrender to allowing the higher power that's breathing us anyway to get us back in alignment. And then we do restoration work, we do purging work and healing work and looking at ourselves through the fourth and fifth steps and making amends through the eighth and ninth step, and then starting to have our feet on the ground. Again, back to that Maslow's hierarchy in the AA world, they call it sex, security, and society. You can call it a three-legged stool. You can call it whatever you want. But the point is that after stage one recovery is about getting back into life and getting a sense of the beginning of recovery. Okay, I'm back on track. And so that's stage one work. But then what comes beyond that, the AA 12 steps say, and in the 12th step, and practice these principles in all of our affairs. Well, how do you define all of our affairs? Many people who come into the 12-step room begin to define themselves just by being in the 12-step room. That's a recovery program. That's not all of our affairs. That's not the next step. So stage two recovery is really about self-actualization. It's about working through who you are in the larger world. And however that looks, I mean, you don't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a big career thing, but it has to do with, yeah, I'll tell you, I don't know how familiar you are with, you know, what goes on in the rooms, but there's a kind of a almost fundamentalist part of some things that can go on there. And one of them is, you know, I just having people, you know, say, I just have to remember I'm just a sick alcoholic. Well, I'll tell you something. If you are a sick alcoholic after working a rigorous program of self-examination and altruistic work in the world, then you're not in a recovery program. You're in an illness maintenance program. So you're well than most people in the culture because we have to look at ourselves. But then so stage one gets us to the point where we're like, wow, okay, I've got my brain back. I've got my basic sense of ethics and values back. And now I have to look at, okay, who do I want to be in the world? What is my contribution? How do I practice these principles in all of my affairs? And what are all of my affairs? So that stage two recovery is really moving into the world.
Yeah, you know, that was one thing, you know, as you were talking about, you know, the program and, you know, the recognition of sickness or the acknowledgement of sickness. You know, it's, I can understand the idea, you know, if someone, you know, doesn't acknowledge, you know, that there's an issue before they address it, you know. So, you know, so acknowledging a need to be better or get better or to, you know, to shift, I can see where that is important. But also that idea of kind of the constant, even if you've done it, you know, and it's a, you know, it's a lifelong acknowledgement, you know, kind of a way of life that you know, that to follow. But also, like you say, you know, after a certain period of time, you know, there's, you know, it seems like it's kind of giving into the idea that I am perpetually and continually going to be sick. No matter what I do, I'm going to be sick.
Right. Well, the problem is that there really wasn't a next stage developed. I mean, people were thrilled to just be able. We're all pretty sick when we get in there. And so acknowledging that is pretty important. And it's actually
right.
A relief, don't you think? I mean, it's a relief to go, wait, maybe I'm not just a bad or crazy person, but I'm sick. And so it's critical at the beginning for stage one recovery to, you know, to treat that illness. If you were going in for chemotherapy and had been diagnosed with a malignancy, and you found yourself going through all the treatments, when you are in the active stage of that disease being active, you're sick. You're really ill. Then,
right.
If you go through the whole course of treatment, the doctors say, you know what? You're in remission. You're well. You're fine. You're cancer free. People don't walk around saying, I'm just a sick cancer patient. They move into stage two. They move back into life. So we are pretty sick when we get there. But the point is, how do you then, it's almost, it becomes a superstition to hold on to, I just have to remember I'm a sick person. Well, you have to learn about yourself. And certainly in the last 60 to 75 years since the program has existed, so much more has been learned about neuroscience, about nutrition, about all of the psychosocial elements that go into addiction, about trauma, the function of trauma on the brain and in the psyche. So the program was written, it's kind of like looking back at a Civil War remedy for a gunshot wound, just bite the bullet and drink some whiskey and puff it out. Well, we don't do that anymore, thank God. So this was a great beginning. And Bill Wilson, who was one of the co-founders and really the more enlightened of the two, he said, look, we know this is only the beginning. I mean, we need to move into emotional sobriety. And the sad thing is, he knew it needed to happen, but he didn't know how to do it, and he couldn't do it for himself either. He died suffering from tremendous depression. And really, Dr. Bob Smith, who was the other founder of the program, was 15 years sober from beginning to end until he died. Well, that's stage one recovery. So the program was written by two guys, one of whom died before the thing really evolved onward into long-term recovery in his life. And then Bill Wilson, had, I think about 35 years sober when he died, and the last 5 years of his life were kind of a living hell. But he was smart enough to know what he needed. It didn't exist yet, but now we have so much science and so much new stuff. So you can't keep practicing an old thing, an old medieval or Civil War era treatment when we have new treatments.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it just seems, that the more we learn, the more we really need to adapt our approach, to healing, and
that's in all of life, not just addiction. Yeah, it's really an evolutionary growth path. I'm not that interested in addiction, really. I mean, I'm so far, I just celebrated 40 years in recovery. So, I mean, I'm really pretty disinterested. It's a day at a time. It's a living path for me. I've started on Broadway. I've earned master's and doctoral degrees. I have been highly motivated in my recovery to restore and to really heal. But the point is, I'm really not that interested in addiction. I'm really interested in recovery. I'm interested in healing and in wellness-based recovery. I want to hear, what's right with you? Don't sit around reciting what's wrong with you. What's right with you? And for newcomers, they need somebody who wants to tell them what was wrong with them. That's great, and that exists. However, beyond a certain point, what's right with you? And a lot of people have a hard time answering that question because they haven't been focusing on it.
Right. When you talked about, the bridge, to the life after the first stage one. And that you've known people who've kind of gotten stuck on the bridge, that bridge, and that, part of the contributing factors to kind of being stuck, one that maybe that, what is at the end of the bridge is too unknown to them, or they feel that they don't fit into what lies at
said, I think we're weller than well at that point, and we don't really fit in an addicted society. So it's a real challenge to figure out, okay, how do I, we want to live a spiritual path. So many people have returned to the religion of their origin or tried a new religion and realized, wait a minute, I don't want to be here. This is crazy. And I was a minister, I'm still a minister, but I was a pastor for many years. And I found that people didn't come to those communities for the best reasons. Often people were trying to avoid hitting bottom with an addiction of some sort, or I don't know what they were there for. But I don't consider churches, they have a lot of rules, and you know, and doctrine and et cetera, but I think so. So people, I think at the end of that bridge is a big question mark. How do you then design a life that is a life that incorporates these amazing healing steps and maintenance steps and a spiritual and ethical way of life, but how do you incorporate that and create a new way of living? Because it can get pretty lonely. You know, professionally I work with many people, a lot of whom drink, and some of the social gatherings involve drinking. More and more I'm watching all this happy hour stuff, and so many people are, we have a big alcohol problem again. I mean, I don't know why, you know, people really aren't talking too much about it. I mean, people are really focusing on this somewhat manufactured opioid addiction craze. It's a real thing, but it's, you know, it's somewhat manufactured as well, the severity of the situation caused by pharmaceutical companies being in cahoots with doctors, essentially. However, people are drinking. Young people are drinking. People are dying. People are committing suicide. We have issues with alcohol. So, but when we get across that, so I hang out. I go to these professional gatherings, and after about, you know, 45 minutes when people have begun to repeat themselves or get drunk, I leave. You know, it's boring. So then what kind of world, what kind of world do I want to be part of? If the people in AA are saying I'm just a sick alcoholic, I don't want to hang out with them. And then I get into the professional world and people are, you know, getting drunk. Well, okay, so there's got to be something in between there. So, I think it's really about designing a life. We move into a culture that is in many ways unhealthy. There was a wonderful book years ago called by a woman named Anne Wilson Schaeff called When Society Becomes an Addict. So she's saying, you know, everybody's hooked on something. And so if you're trying to be a non-addicted person in a work-addicted culture, caffeine-addicted, speed, success, celebrity-addicted, it's tough. You're definitely, doing a countercultural thing. So I'm thrilled to see how many spiritual communities are developing. You know, there are a lot of Buddhist communities and various interspiritual communities that are developing that are also countercultural, the mindfulness movement, et cetera, to really move people into a way of being in this world that's a pretty hopped up, crazy world with values that really aren't the values we learn through the 12 steps. So people get to the end of that bridge and go, wait a minute, back to life. I don't want to go. I don't want to go out there. But we've got to figure out a way to support an evolutionary growth path, and somebody has to start it.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, we're already halfway through the show, Dr. Galloway. So I want to take just a quick break. And then when we come back, one of the things you talk about in your book is developmental breaks. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that because...
Okay,
we'll just go ahead and leave it at that. So we'll be back in about 90 seconds. Okay.
Great.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Jane Galloway. She is author of The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. And again, you can find out more about her work by visiting the website www.janegalloway.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Galloway back. Hello.
Hi.
Good. Before we talk about developmental breaks, we do have a caller who called in and just kind of wanted to make a comment on some of the things that you said already. And she's also a Californian, but she's up from the valley.
Okay.
Down here. So okay. Trish? Hey, Trish.
Oh, yes. Hi. Hi, Robert and Dr. Jane. Yeah. I wanted to, I'm going to go back and listen to the beginning of the show because I just turned in 5 or 10 minutes ago and I caught a couple of your comments and I went, yes, she gets it. This lady is great. People that come to my home that I employ, handymen, and a lot of them are AA members. I mean, so many of them. And they can't wait to tell me. I've been in AA for 8 years, and I'm an AA, and I'm an alcoholic. But they use I am, and I try to explain the I am as always present. So when they sort of say I am, and I say, but when you go to a meeting and you keep referring that after 8 years, you should be saying, hi, today I chose to drink orange juice. I'm an orange juice drinker. And I said, so put your hand on your heart and tell me which one feels better, saying I'm an alcoholic or I'm an orange juice drinker today. And they get it in a second, but they're addicted to the group. Like they actually leave work to run to the group. And they come here with lack of money, with a lack of energy of manifesting, and they kind of get frozen in that time frame. And I had one that used to arrive all the time, and I used to call him Bible Boy, because he used to walk around with his Bible from the Bible energy of AA. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
Yeah,
and so
I do.
He was better. And he used to walk, and he'd turn up, I'd be here at 9 o'clock, and then he wouldn't turn up for 2 days, and I'd have a sink not finished and whatever, whatever. And I used to say that Bible Boy, that in the Bible, if you read the content, it would never kind of work like that with a person. It would respect them enough to call and say, I'm running late, or, sorry, I'll be there in a day or two. So I, used to have that reference with him. But he always had to leave to run to AA at all different times.
Okay, I'd like to respond to that. If I can address what you've raised here, part of it really is people are rather than saying I drink orange juice, that's great. But the point is, really what probably would be better to say is I'm a recovering alcoholic, because the point is the severity of the illness is dramatic. And I don't have any problem saying I'm a recovering alcoholic. I mean, that is what my recovery program was based in. So 8 years is really stage one recovery, and people are holding on to a new identity. So that's why they're saying that. So I would just say, yes, I absolutely think there's something about letting go of that at some point. But this is why I talk about stage one and stage two recovery. Really,
yes.
It's important to understand the severity of the illness and relapse. A lot of the work I do is relapse prevention. If you don't know where you're going, as the old phrase said, any old path will do. So once you've made it through the 12 steps and are working them and have seen how they're working in your life in a positive way, then you have to have a next goal. But I think unless you're in a 12-step program and understand the severity of the illness, trying to get somebody to not self-identify is probably, I don't know about that. I mean, what I would just say is it's part of the recovery process to say, wait a minute, I get it. This is what I have suffered from all these years. Then we need to have next stage growth. So, I love AA. It saved my life. It continues to be a hugely important part of my life. So I don't want this to be a critique of the basics of AA.
No,
I do think
there is a next stage recovery
that needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah. Doctor, I totally agree with what you're saying, that it's a huge stepping stone for so many people. Can I ask you just another fraction of a question? If a child, like a friend of mine's daughter, they thought she was the alcoholic at 14, right?
But right.
The actual child was going through a lot of trauma at 14, parents unhappy in marriage for many years, decades. Losing homes, doing this, all these changes, and also heavily addicted to dark drama on television. I mean, loved Kill Bill and saw it like 20 times. You know, her father's in the industry, so she sees a lot of dark energy.
Yeah.
Now, they put her into an alcoholic system, the AA program, and she's a big advocate for it. She teaches it and, works with people and things like that. It's her career now. But the thing is there a point where you're not really the disease? And if you did have a drink, have you broken the cardinal, spiritual, like on your wedding, you want everybody drinking champagne. Does it matter if you have a sip of champagne?
I think what we know is that we are physiologically different from our peers. This we know, and this is the part the medical profession understands. So, frankly, I don't want to risk it. I can tell you I have a very strong reaction to anything. I mean, if I happen to get something that has some alcohol in the cooking or something, I know it before I can taste it, because my body says, yes, finally, she remembered. So I don't want to risk it.
I've never been attracted to alcohol at all, so I don't drink. But
that's a good question, Trish.
I'm not here to rip it. I'm just saying, is there some of the people in the system that actually become healed from the intake of alcohol?
It's unknown, but what I'm trying to say here is it's really people die when they relapse frequently. Why try it? A sip of champagne at your wedding is not worth ending up 6 feet under. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Thanks for calling, Trish.
I'm not minimizing the severity of the illness at all.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling, Trish. Those are really good points. I mean, those are really good, points that you brought up, and I appreciate you calling and sharing them.
Yes. Look, I really appreciate
it.
I'm going to listen to it as well. Hang up here, and I'm going to go back to the radio.
Thank you. All right.
Thanks.
Yeah, Dr. Galloway, that was going to kind of lead into my next question when it came when talking about the healing of trauma. And before the break, I mentioned the developmental breaks. So can you talk about how interspiritual support kind of a mechanism can help with the healing of trauma and developmental breaks?
Right. Well, actually, again, back to those diagrams and Maslow's hierarchy, and in the back of my book, and this is called The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality, Dynamic Practices That Work. And in the back, you will see visuals of a lot of these developmental programs. So Maslow, I told you, the first is physiological.
Right.
You have to have that basis. And also, Eric Erickson, who did the 8 ages of man, but the beginning one, starts with birth to 12 to 18 months, then goes on to 18 months to 3 years, and the different things that people are learning, that humans are developing during those developmental times. And the father of developmental psychology is Jean Piaget, who I studied years ago when I was working with small children. Early childhood education is really kind of based upon developmental psychology, and Jean Piaget is the father, and then it became a whole field. But the idea is exactly what I'm talking about, that, you know, you can't build on a faulty, well, what did we learn? I mean, you know, the three little pigs, you know. One of them built a house that stood up, and probably the reason was not just that he probably maybe paid a little more attention than the guy who was building a house out of straw. So in my own case, I'll give you an example. I went through a lot of early trauma in my life based on a lot of the stuff that our caller was referring to, but also, you know, many moves, et cetera. I was a very bright child and went through a terrible custody suit around age 9 between my parents, and ended up being in 3 different schools. One, where we were beginning multiplication, and by the time I got into the 3rd school, they had already gotten into short division, et cetera, moved on. I was completely lost. It has hampered me my entire life. I missed math. I tried to fake it for the rest of my life, and it was that's a developmental break. Now, so in other words, we have those breaks emotionally, and so what I did was, which a lot of alcoholics and addicts do, were very quick and smart people. They have discovered that often people who become addicted are above average intelligence, and this is in the literature of the program, but also beyond that. So what I did was I developed my verbal and interpersonal skills, my artistic talents, but I think I would have been great at math too. It's just that I didn't have the basic building blocks. So the point of the gateways is to help people go back and look at, okay, where did I get lost? What area is undeveloped in me that I need to develop in order to have a firm foundation, in order to have that three little pig house of bricks? You know, so what is that developmental break? So at the back of my book, you see the gateways and also tools for transcultural interspiritual bento box. Once you kind of get the idea here, you can work these at any different level. And I go into really describing a non-punitive way to also work the steps, even as a beginner, in the narrative of each one of the gateway ideas. So each gateway includes a step. And there's a lot of kind of, you know, shame-based talk within the culture of AA. Shame is I am bad. Guilt is I did something bad. Guilt, we make amends, we can fix. Guilt, we can say, you know what, I want to do a 4th and 5th step. I want to figure out why I did that stuff. I want to make amends to these people, and I want to not repeat that behavior to the best of my ability. That's esteem building, because we're able to say, I have changed. I have changed my behavior. Shame has to do with I am bad, and a lot of people come into addiction feeling that they're bad, they're deficient in some way. Very toxic parenting in many cases, all kinds of stuff goes into this. So the thing is to shift from shame to healthy guilt and then move beyond both of them and not have a shame-based program, but really have a program that is, okay, I have a deficit there. I have a math deficit. How do I work with that? In my organizations, I've always sought out a really strong person who can do the books and who can look at the figures, because that's really not my strongest area. I'm good with conceptual thinking and with understanding what people are trying to get at in their own lives and helping them move beyond a certain level. But I learned to adapt to that developmental break. At one point, years ago, someone suggested, why don't you go back and take a math class at junior college? I was so involved with getting these, but that could have maybe been helpful. I just wasn't into it at that moment. I mean, I struggled through algebra. I loved geometry, even when I was in high school. And the interesting thing is geometry is about spatial thinking. It's about three-dimensional thinking. Yeah, that worked for me. Algebra, I still have no clue. But I don't think I necessarily needed to not be able to have a clue. I had a developmental break. it might even have been more challenging for me. Maybe I would have said, you know, this is hard, but I wouldn't have felt so defeated because I just didn't have the basic building blocks. This happens with psychological tools. It happens with different spiritual tools. So a lot of this process that I talk about in the Gateways really helps people support going back and filling in those places. Now, when you mention trauma, there are wonderful modalities for addressing trauma. One of them is called somatic experiencing. There's eye movement desensitization therapy. Trauma really impacts the brain. And we have learned this so much over the last 20, 25 years. And that's a huge breakthrough for addiction because a lot of these therapies, through they're physiological techniques and also version of hypnosis, can actually rewire our brain to heal those places where the trauma was short-circuiting our thinking or our ability to really function or thrive. So, but the trauma really does need to be addressed. Too many people are relapsing because they get to the point where they're just starting to get to their core issues and they freak out and they use or drink and then go back to being a beginner again. And so there are a lot of people within the programs who don't get the help they need to really move through those core issues that created people who needed to be addicted in the first place, you know.
Yeah. Well, wow. One of the things in the title of your book, The Wisdom of the 12-Step Spirituality, you also talk in the book about a wisdom path and wisdom is part of this. So can you explain what that is?
Absolutely. So if you look at the wisdom is deep knowing, is a deep sense of knowing and the truth. It's the mystic path. Then the path of knowledge or the path of, so in other words, there's a wonderful book called One River, Many Wells, and this is by Fox, Matthew Fox, Father Matthew Fox, who wrote this.
I lost you there. I lost you there for a second. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't sure.
All right.
Okay. So many wells, one river, many wells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This wisdom path. So in other words, you know, you get into it, but a lot of religions, for instance, you know, are all part. They all feed into, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Shinto, Buddhism, blah blah blah. All these things, Islam. They're all part of. They all feed into one kind of way of looking at the world. But if you go deeper, as Yogananda said, he said, pick a path, any path, and go deeper. And that's really where the wisdom path resides. And it's the same yesterday, today. Sense of truth and knowingness, and it exists in all great traditions. So wisdom, and, you know, then there are the wisdom writers. The wisdom writers in the Bible are wonderful writings in the Song of Solomon, etc. But the wisdom text, Ecclesiastes, those are wisdom.
Boy, we keep going in and out here, Dr. Galloway.
What?
I'm sorry. I didn't say I'm kind of losing you. In and out. We're going in and out. I'm not sure what's wrong with this little technical connection that we have here.
I don't know why.
Yeah, for as long as you can hear, yeah, that's fine. That's great. I just didn't want to lose anything for our listeners.
Right. Okay. Well, so the idea is to go deeper. Pick a path, any path, and go deeper. And that's where the wisdom path resides. And so there's a wisdom. Wisdom is beyond any particular religion. It is at the root of being, and so that's the best way to describe, I think, a wisdom path. Okay.
Great. So.
Then the way I got to it was that I realized that the many years that I worked, and I worked these steps, and I have really, really, this program has of living has really just transformed my life. Of course. So, thing was, I began to realize, wait a minute. independent study on the 12 steps as 20th century pluralistic religious movement. So I did a lot of investigation into where the different strands of all this came from, and you know, the Oxford group and various New Thought people, Emmett Fox, etc., Hindu teachings, they all came into this thing. And the thing that I believe makes the program so powerful is the fact that it is a universal walk. It's not a more narrow doctrinaire fundamentalist path. But that conflict has been there from the beginning. Dr. Bob was much more traditional and Christian and kind of shame-based in his approach to his sobriety, sadly. And he also, you know, he didn't live that long beyond the time he got sober.
Well, you wonder what kind of shifts would have happened if he had lived longer, you know, and been able to, you know,
who knows? It's
knowledge,
just everything
knowledge
evolves on.
Yeah. So, how do you see people using the principles of the gateways?
I see people opening up the book and reading it and beginning to see, wow, that door opens for me internally. There's a lot of information in there, a lot of information in the book, many practical tools, but also a lot of history about the socio-cultural conditions that kind of went into post-World War II, the creation of this, you know, many, many thousands and zillions and millions of people gravitating toward the 12 steps. There were a lot of cultural shifts after World War II, but also the Industrial Revolution, which was earlier. So there's history in there. There's a lot about Jesus, the Jesus path, and the stage recovery. How do I keep moving and growing in my recovery? And I see it as the kind of book. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful book. It was beautifully illustrated, and I worked very, very hard to get that to be the look of it so that people could understand that this really isn't about some sort of grim process. I see this wisdom path of the 12 steps really as a technicolor, wonderful journey into the beauty path, or the path of the Native American spirituality, the Jesus path, et cetera, et cetera. So I think people just open it up. You can open it at the back and go forward, at the front and go backward. You can find tools. You can use it in many, many different ways. But it supports a lifetime of evolutionary growth beyond the bridge. My message is get off the bridge. Get off the bridge and get into life.
There you go. Well, Dr. Galloway, this has really been a treat. I really want to thank you for your time and sharing with us about the gateways.
Thank you. Yes, I've enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Great to meet you and our caller.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Jane Galloway. We've been talking about her book, The Gateways, The Wisdom of 12-Step Spirituality. And again, you can find out more about her work by visiting www.janegalloway.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.